Why was marijuana made illegal? Because they said it made people rape and kill. They called it Reefer Madness. They made movies about it. They had a national program, an international program of misinformation. And prohibition is the legacy of the lie that marijuana causes rape and murder. It was a racist campaign aimed at fear of Mexicans and fear of Negroes in white America.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre, and this is Green Planet FM. Today, I have in the studio Ty Stopford, who is a hemp enthusiast and medical educator. He was a secondary school teacher, and he's been interested in hemp and cannabis since his teens, and then went off it a bit, and then Helen Kelly, who you may remember stood up for medical cannabis very much when she was dying, renewed his interest. So he founded the Hemp Foundation in 2016. I'll let him tell you the rest. Kia ora, Tig.
Kia ora, Lisa. Thank you for having me. It was actually Dr. Ben Jansen and myself who founded the Hemp Foundation in 2016. Both of us motivated by a strong desire to help improve things for people.
And when you say improve, you're talking about people who aren't well?
That's one aspect, only one aspect. So Ben lost his mother to a potentially treatable neurological illness before he understood cannabis. My father died of medical misadventure. If cannabis hadn't been prohibited, it's possible his death could have been avoided. And I have, my family has multiple sclerosis, cancer, and my stepfamily have psychosis. All of these conditions, again, potentially treatable with a prohibited plant.
Prohibited in New Zealand?
Prohibited in New Zealand. And, you know, it has been prohibited around the world for 100 years thanks to the efforts of the United States.
Well, when we say the efforts of the United States, we really have to look directly at the pharmaceutical company, don't we?
It didn't start with the pharmaceutical companies. It actually started with a fellow called Harry Anslinger, who was the director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. And with the end of prohibition, he was facing budget cuts and needed a new demon. Hemp was at the time being touted as the world's first billion-dollar crop by the United States Department of Agriculture. And cannabis itself was a medicine of considerable use within the United States, Europe, and the world at that point in time, was well known as a valuable crop. In fact, it used to be illegal not to grow cannabis in the United States. It used to be illegal not to grow hemp cannabis in Great Britain. You used to be able to pay your taxes with hemp in the United States. Cannabis has been the strategic resource of most empires in history, because it's food, it's fiber, it's medicine.
Well, we'll go into the difference between hemp and cannabis in a minute, but I do know that Henry Ford apparently made a motor car made of hemp, because hemp can make many, 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 many different things. You can build houses from it.
You can. You can build. So hempcrete is basically hemp herds, hemp stem and lime. It's fireproof. It has a really high thermal value, keeps you really warm, but it also breathes. So as opposed to our moldy old houses in New Zealand, a hemp house, you walk into it and it breathes. It's a beautiful, comfortable, warm, light, cool, airy place to be.
But, of course, we can't have them in New Zealand at this stage. And this is really because the hemp plant looks, and is related, but looks so similar to a cannabis plant?
Well, hemp is cannabis. Hemp is cannabis sativa, which means cultivated. So cannabis sativa is hemp, and hemp is food and fiber and medicine. Cannabis indica is what we commonly associate with marijuana, a higher THC content, and grown for its drug use, whereas hemp is grown for the food, the fiber, the medicine.
So you can't get high from hemp?
It's yes and no. So hemp is legally defined because they're basically the same plant, but marijuana is a female, yeah? It's a desperately undersexed female, which is expressing all of these compounds to try and capture any pollen that might be flying around. So marijuana, drug cannabis, is sexually frustrated females, generally. I know. And then hemp is the whole crop grown en masse. And so in the wild, hemp would have no more than 5% THC, you know, naturally occurring. And it might have the same percent CBD, two of the major cannabinoids.
And the THC is the one that makes you high. And
yes.
The CBD is the one that helps your health. Is that correct?
Well, they both help your health. This is the thing. I worry that we're going to confuse people already because of how we've jumped into this. But basically, hemp is food, fiber, medicine. It is legally restricted in New Zealand to 0.2% THC. So if it's over 0.2% THC, they consider it to be, you know, a hot crop, you know, a drug crop, and it has to be destroyed. But if it's under 0.2% THC, then it's hemp.
Okay, so how come our farmers aren't growing heaps of it?
Well, that's a really interesting story. So Canada has prevented its farmers from $52 billion, billion with a B, over the last 20 years, by not allowing them to bring their hemp crops to the public. Now, Canada has the same rules as us on the 0.2% THC. So why weren't they able to bring those crops to the public? Now, what's the actual reason? And it's very difficult to see a good reason, because in Italy, where they accidentally legalized industrial hemp in 2016, pharmaceutical sales are down 11% for sedatives, analgesics, and antipsychotics, and down 1.5% across the board through all of Italy, because people are substituting expensive drugs with serious side effects for plant matter grown by Italian farmers.
I'm still learning all about this, and this is why I've brought you into the studio, because for me, I have got an arthritic knee, mm-hmm. and I don't want to have surgery on it.
Yep.
And so I heard that I could get CBD oil from a doctor in Auckland, so I went and said, could I have some, please, for pain relief? And I've been on it, I think, for 3 weeks now. And I'm hopping around all over the place, very happy. But it's expensive. It's not fair that I can afford it and other people can't. And that really gets me.
It's a scandal. Oh, I get so angry. I get so cross. It's a scandal. The emperor has no clothes. Everyone remembers the story, right? The emperor has no clothes. The emperor's naked, but everybody is pretending that the emperor is wearing beautiful robes and deserves his position of authority. The emperor, in this case, is our government and many, many, many governments. Why was marijuana made illegal? Because they said it made people rape and kill.
Oh, what rubbish.
Oh, what rubbish. But they called it Reefer Madness. They made movies about it. They had a national program, an international program of misinformation. And prohibition is the legacy of the lie that marijuana causes rape and murder. It was a racist campaign aimed at fear of Mexicans and fear of Negroes in white America.
And, of course, the alcohol lobby, which, as well as the pharmaceutical lobby, they're very, very powerful. And I think the alcohol lobby might think that people would give up alcohol if they could then relax with marijuana.
I don't really want to get into conspiracy theories, but it is a fact that in legal states of America where cannabis is available, alcohol sales are down 15%, which in a New Zealand context would be $1.4 billion in lost revenues. It's also a fact that drug prescriptions in legal states, down around 4,000 prescriptions per doctor per year, which in New Zealand, at say $15 a script, would be about $1 billion. So this is a competitive product in multiple categories, not just alcohol, not just pharmaceuticals, but also timber, paper, food, fuel, oil, paints. You know, if it's grown, this is the world's most valuable plant, and we have prohibited it. And by prohibiting it, we have set the world up for synthetics and for hydrocarbons, petrochemicals.
And we know what a disaster the synthetic marijuana has been in New Zealand.
80 dead, yeah.
Yeah, and thanks to the politicians for that.
Yeah.
And, of course, we could have an option to have something other than the oil industry.
Yeah, I mean,
climate change would be a big one we could mention here.
China calls it a strategic resource, and they are growing over 1 million acres. They're chasing 5 million.
Right.
We have about 4,000 acres of hemp in New Zealand at the moment. But we've been growing it since 2008. And since that time, the hemp industry has been systematically disabled by the Ministry of Health. It's really interesting. Dr. Keith Bedford, PhD, who was the general manager of ESR, Environmental Science and Research, you know, the police's laboratory, the government's chemist, actually made a statement to the High Court against the Ministry of Health. The Ministry of Health took a position that CBD is basically THC. Yeah, and that was their excuse to keep it as a controlled drug. Now, in many, many countries around the world, CBD is basically a vitamin. Yeah, so CBD is the World Health Organization says that CBD, cannabidiol, has no scope for abuse. No scope for abuse.
Well, now this is very interesting. I can tell you from experience that CBD really, I mean, the one I take, made in Canada, is certainly no THC, because I cannot cope with any sort of THC or alcohol or anything like that. I can't even cope with coffee. I'm a little sensitive, you know? And so I couldn't possibly take anything with THC in it. I mean, I think possibly there might be a 0.002 in it or something like that, I think it says on the website. But anything that would make me, I don't know, high, I suppose is the term, is an absolute no-no. So this is absolutely wrong if there's any Ministry of Health saying that CBD is something that people would use to get high. It's nonsense.
Well, they didn't say, they just basically said it was the same as THC. They said CBD is an isomer of THC, which the government's chemist, you know, ESR, completely disagreed with. They used that that decision, and they were supposed to listen to Dr. Bedford, because Dr. Bedford was a founder of the Expert Advisory Committee on Drugs, which is the government's statutory advisor on drugs. So his position should have been listened to, but instead, to defeat him, to get past that, they relied upon anonymous legal advice, which they have refused to disclose. And that anonymous legal advice justified internally their position that CBD should be a controlled drug.
I see.
Yeah. CBD is now available on prescription, which is an enormous progress. But these bureaucratic barriers just pile up like tangle brush, and they get a life of their own, you know. So it's better not to have them in the first place than to have to go back and slash them down.
Yeah, but I mean, it is. It's good that it's available on prescription, and of course that's how I get it. But why does it cost so much? I mean, it's so wrong. So many people can't afford, let's say, $350 for every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
That is way, way, way too high. And you think, why is it that high?
Because it's not about people. If it was about people, then New Zealand's... So we have farmers in New Zealand who are legally growing industrial hemp, who are legally growing cannabis, and have been growing it since 2008. If our farmers were able to sell their hemp to the public, then the public would be able to treat themselves and support their own health. Now, this is really important. People don't understand medical cannabis. We should never, ever, ever call cannabis medical. That's a terrible mistake, because as soon as you call it medical, as soon as you make a therapeutic claim, then it comes under the power of the Ministry of Health. So we shouldn't call it medical cannabis. Here's the trick. Here's the magic. Our body makes cannabinoids inside our body. We make over 60 cannabinoids. If we didn't make those cannabinoids, we'd die, right? So these cannabinoids are essential for our health and well-being. Now, the plant makes over 150 cannabinoids. Now, we discover them first in the plant. That's why they're called cannabinoids. We only discovered the molecules in our body in the 1990s. So those babies who are born and die without feeding, they appear very similar to mice who are basically created, mutated without, you know, cannabinoid receptors. They have a failure to suckle, a failure to thrive. They have no appetite. You know, they do not function, and that's because more than 2% of our body, right? So 2% of our body is hardwired with cannabinoid receptors. That's a lot of our body, 2%.
It is.
We have more cannabinoid receptors in our brain than we have neurotransmitters. All right? So, and that's because our cannabinoid system is nature's preferred mechanism for information exchange at the cellular level. And we are made of cells. So the mechanism for information exchange at the cellular level is our cannabinoid system. If there are any doctors or scientists out there who want to look into this, they're called G-protein-coupled receptors. And if you have a look at G-protein-coupled receptors and you explore what they're responsible for, you'll see they're responsible for an enormous amount of critical functions. And what they basically do is... So I'll try and paint a picture. So, in our brain, we have neurons. Now, from one neuron to another, you have neurotransmitters going in a one-way fashion. Now, if we have too much neurotransmission, we may have inflammation and pain. So, how can we manage that? How does our body manage that one-way system of communication? Because, you know, we know one-way communication doesn't work. You need two-way communication. So what happens is the neurotransmitters go from the neuron at the top to the neuron at the bottom, and the neuron at the bottom is where the cannabinoids are made, and they then travel back across the gap to the top neuron and send the signal, you know, and in doing so, signal whether more neurotransmission is required or less neurotransmission is required. So the easiest way to think of your cannabinoid system is as the system of systems. So it's the system that ensures all of our other systems, our endocrine system, our cytokine system, our neuroimmuno, all of these systems, that they're all operating as they should be, maintaining that nice sort of safe, operating in the green, as it were, you know, within the parameters that are best for our function.
That's amazing. And very complicated.
Yeah. Well, it gets more complicated. I mean, cannabis is incredibly complicated. It's so funny that people call it dope, because you really do need multiple PhDs to get across this subject. It's incredibly complex.
Oh, I think I must be a dope.
We're all dopes. Yeah.
But that's really interesting. And I suppose because of what you're describing, would that be connected with the fact that CBD can affect and help with anxiety and things like that?
CBD, so the mechanism of CBD's action is it upregulates your CB1 receptors in your brain and central nervous system, your 5-1-HTPA receptors, and the parasympathetic hypothalamus. So basically, yes, that's a whole lot of jargon that just says, yes, CBD reduces anxiety, CBD is a bone growth stimulant, CBD is a powerful antipsychotic. In fact, CBD is as powerful an antipsychotic as the world standard amisulpride, but without any of its severe adverse effects. So there's very little that you can't potentially enhance treatment of with cannabinoids because they are our body's molecule for maintenance, repair, normal function.
I think that's really important.
Mm, me too.
Yes, so that's affecting our body's repair. So, for example, with arthritis, it will help repair as well as take the pain away?
There's even a body of thought that says nerve damage can potentially be repaired by cannabinoids. Ben Oakley, who has stiff man syndrome in Australia, he literally has a 1 in 20 million disease that, you know, could kill him at any time. Dozens of fits a day, incredible spikes in temperature. His father's a nurse, actually, conservative family, not a cannabis family. And then they discovered cannabis. And where no one could help him, he was able to help himself.
Right.
You know, and he believes that nerve damage can be repaired through cannabis therapeutics. And there is some research to indicate that. But the problem here is cannabis is a patient-driven phenomenon. You know, it's not an industry-led phenomenon. It's not a science-led phenomenon. It's actually a citizen-led phenomenon where we've had decades and decades of people saying, this works for me. This works for me. And that ripple effect going out as the word spreads and more people take action into their own hands and grow cannabis, make it available to other people, for themselves, their friends, their families. So, I mean, I showed you that paper, the United States Department of Justice, in the matter of marijuana rescheduling petition on September 6th, 1988, when Judge Francis Young said, the evidence in this record clearly shows that marijuana has been accepted as capable of relieving the distress of great numbers of very ill people and doing so with safety. It would be unreasonable, arbitrary, and capricious for DEA to continue to stand between those sufferers and the benefits of this substance in light of the evidence of this record. The plant, considered as a whole, has a currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States, and the judge recommends the administrator transfer marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. In 1988. Still hasn't been done.
No, because although 30-something states in the US have legalized cannabis, there's federally it's not. Is that correct?
Federally it's illegal. And here's an interesting factoid. 38% of all medicines targeting human beings target your G-protein-coupled receptor system, i.e. your cannabinoid system. So it's a $1.1 trillion industry which has been repeatedly found guilty of anti-competitive practices, fraudulent marketing, and 38% of medicines targeting humans. So very rough maths, we could say $300 billion worth of their revenues are at risk from a plant that you could grow in your garden.
I see. I definitely see. Yes.
Oh, it's comedy.
But the question is, why is New Zealand's government then supporting industry and not what the people want?
That's a great question. I spoke to Winston Peters at Christmas, and he said that medical cannabis was coming faster than people realise. Okay, what does that mean, Winnie? Because, you know, his partner was the general manager of Janssen & Janssen Pharmaceuticals, which is the New Zealand arm of Johnson & Johnson, who were just fined $530 million for their role in the opioid crisis. Again, you know, lies and fraudulent marketing. So is medical cannabis just about, you know, medicines and, you know, steady as she goes, business as usual? Because we can see in some countries around the world, like Israel, for example, where they're the world leaders, cannabis has been medicalized. You can now get cannabis as a medicine. And they've got over 30,000 treatments. But you've got to go through every other medicine first before you get to it.
Oh, good grief, that would destroy you.
Well, no, not destroy you. But, you know, it's like, why go through products that have more severe adverse effects first?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive. But this is the thing. Niccolò Machiavelli. You know, he said that There's nothing so less certain to succeed as someone who sets out to institute a new order of things, because everyone who benefits from the old order will be opposed. You know, this is, hemp is literally a transformational crop. It is a transformational crop for our economy, for our environment, for our health. New Zealand's Treasury has been saying since 2009 that we face a debt-based future as a country, a debt-based future as a country, because of the unaffordable cost of the chronic health conditions like diabetes, obesity, age-related illnesses that we're failing to treat expensively. So we're digging a hole for ourselves as a community, and we're not getting any benefit from the hole. We're just digging the hole. So the model actually needs to change. It's actually an existential issue for us. We need to change the model because the model's not serving our community's needs, and it's bankrupting us.
Well, now, one of the things that is making people so sick are the pesticides that are involved with cultivating a lot of the crops and a lot of, you know, our fruits and vegetables and milk and everything like that. And we have glyphosate and other horrible chemicals coming through that's in our systems now. So what's very important is that the hemp industry grows as much organically as possible.
Oh, well, I'd argue that for all crops, really. It'd be great to see New Zealand lead as and become an organic nation.
Because my doctor went to the United States and was looking for a really good CBD oil.
Mm-hmm.
And he said all but one place was growing it with glyphosate.
I think you could grow cannabis in hell and extract cannabinoids safely, because you're just extracting those molecules themselves.
Right.
I could be wrong. I don't know. My preference is for organic food myself. Of course, it's just so expensive. But yeah, I agree. Essentially, I agree. You know, growing organically is better for all of us if we can.
Well, hopefully, as the Hemp Foundation, you could encourage that.
I try to encourage many things, but you've got to find people who listen and act on it. You know, that's the hard part, isn't it, Lisa?
Well, yes, because people want things easy, the easy way. And, of course, it's nice and easy to spray the weeds with glyphosate or whatever. I mean, now, how do they harvest potatoes and onions? They kill the green parts off with glyphosate first and then harvest the crop. So we get glyphosate in our potatoes and onions. I mean,
they spray spray wheat with glyphosate to desiccate it evenly.
Yes, but we don't have too much wheat in New Zealand, especially not in Auckland. North Island. We're really short of that. Depend on Australia.
So Australia. Interesting enough, Australia has a really... Australia is, I think, the largest producer of opioids in the world. It's a huge industry in Tasmania. And, of course, cannabis is a major competitor with opioids, reducing opioid use by 25% in legal states. With individual patients, it also reduces... It reduces the amount of opioids people need to take. Sometimes people are able to stop them entirely. I had a fellow come up to me over the weekend who's stopped taking Tramadol because he's using a hemp oil that I provide to him. There's lots we could do to improve things.
Yes, so the opioids, when you're talking about the opioids, this is growing opium poppies, but not for the illegal industry, but for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so... Yes, that's another reason that they'll be against it, of course, isn't it?
There are market forces. It's a fact of life. There are market forces. And, yeah, it's hard to do things differently. The biggest challenge for us in New Zealand, really, is that if something is a medicine, then it cannot be a food. The only exception I can think of to this is coffee, which is a medicine but also a food. But we can't use... medicines as foods, and because CBD and THC have been called controlled drug, CBD is no longer a controlled drug, but now that they're prescription medicines, they can't be foods, and that's an obstacle to us getting hemp back into the food web, which is what we need.
This is the same issue that we've had with supplements. dietary supplements. It's where do you class them? Do you class them as medicine or do you class them as food? And this has caused a lot of problem in the past for people manufacturing supplements.
Yeah.
So wasn't it... who said, let food be thy medicine?
Yeah, Hippocrates.
Hippocrates, yes.
Yeah. The father of medicine.
Yes. So, I mean...
You're allowed to have... This is where it gets so funny. It really does seem to be more about business than about health and more about business than about people. You're allowed 75 milligrams of CBD per kilo of foodstuffs, which is not a great deal. I think it's 15 milligrams per kilo of THC. The contradiction of the system appears to be that it won't allow... it doesn't want therapeutic compounds in the food web, that it wants a monopoly of those compounds in medicine, quotation marks. A real world example of the craziness of our food production, just stepping sideways a bit, is that, so you know when you smell lavender, how do you feel?
Oh, happy.
Yeah, but relaxed happy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so lavender relaxes us. You actually have a chemical response to lavender because of a terpene, which is basically a medicine but a smell, yeah? It's an essential oil. So when you smell lavender, the essential oil linalool relaxes you. It has a therapeutic effect on your body, even though it's just a smell. Now, cannabis is full of terpenes like that, these aromatic therapeutics. So are other foods, because, we should let food be our medicine. Goodness is in the foods. Now, the flavorings industry, for example, strips out these essential oils, linalool, myrcene, limonene, pinene, beta-carophyllene, and these terpenes, some of them are actually cannabinoids, are essential for our health and well-being as nutritional beings, but they're removed from our foods because they oxidize in time. And because they oxidize, they reduce the shelf life of food products.
Right.
So, you talked before about illness and related to pesticides. There are many things we're doing. We're soiling our own nest, is what we're doing, in many, many different ways.
Definitely.
Removing the essential elements from our food web, polluting our food web. These are all things that we're doing. And simply allowing hemp back into the food web would be a really powerful, really cheap way of improving things.
Now, as far as I know at the moment... hemp is mostly sold as animal food. So if you want to have a hemp protein powder, it says on the label that it's for animals.
That's no longer
taking it.
No, that used to be. These days, no longer. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a little bit complicated. But yeah, that was a workaround for a while, but it's not a workaround anymore. But these days you're allowed to actually sell it as humans, because hemp seed became a legal food in November. After 12 years of illegal...
A year ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm. After 12 years of a legal hemp industry in New Zealand, where every hemp plant was licensed by the Ministry of Health and every hemp farmer was licensed by the Ministry of Health, and they were growing humanity's oldest crop and humanity's most nutritious food, because hemp seed is, it leaves wild-caught salmon for dead. It is an astonishing food. So after 12 years of licensed farmers growing licensed crops, the most nutritious food in the world finally became legal in New Zealand.
Wow. Well, that was a bit slow.
It was.
What's happened to New Zealand being leading the charge on things? So...
That was the 1930s, I think.
Okay, well, my dog, I'm giving hemp oil for her. Mm-hmm. She's not getting the expensive CBD that I do, but she's having a CBD hemp oil, which is considerably cheaper, and I've been able to take her off painkillers too. So you're going to have people like me who are going to be saying, hey, to the government and powers that be, we really, really do need this remedy for us. So,
right here in P, because there's so much ignorance and there's so much prejudice, and presumably there's so much competitive pressure as well. But the main problem's probably ignorance, because it is a confusing subject that very few people understand, and it's heavily stigmatized.
Well, I think we can come to a very logical conclusion that because of New Zealand's suppression of marijuana, we've landed up with a huge pee problem in this country. And if the government had not clamped down so heavily on the marijuana users, then we wouldn't have the pee industry.
In the 1920s, when New Zealand prohibited cannabis, the arguments used were that it was to stop gangs. Yeah.
But of course, there's the other issue that the government will look at and say, well, if people are allowed to grow this stuff, how are we, and sell it, how are we going to get any income tax?
Well, these are challenges. But you could do it, for example, the BBC is funded entirely by television licenses, right?
Yes.
So you could make every household in New Zealand buy a television license for cannabis, for example, clip the ticket that way. If they want to grow, they can grow. You know, and they've paid a license to grow. You could have, basically, our position is that if anyone wants to sell cannabis, it has to be tested to make sure it's safe. It's not full of carcinogenic growth hormones and pesticides and things like that. But that gifting should be allowed, and that self-provision should be allowed. Even the Jesuits are across this and say, you know, cannabis is basically a human right. You know, the right to treat yourself, the right to have every available beneficial treatment, you know, is a human right, and yet it's been denied us. Here's the funny thing. Hemp was a herbal medicine in Britain for 1,000 years. For 1,000 years. Cannabis, in terms of cannabis indica, the THC cannabis, was only discovered by Europeans in 1840. Professor O'Shaughnessy published on it, and he had tested it on tetanus, rabies, cholera, rheumatism, infantile convulsions. And he actually ran a teaching hospital in Calcutta. And this was no mean man, by the way. He invented and built the British telegraph system in India, throughout India.
Oh, right.
He invented electrolyte therapy. You know, he was professor of materia medica, which is basically plant medicine. Yeah.
Right.
And then he ran human tests in his teaching school, in his medical school, and got so excited that he went to press and said, you know, if mere reputation were my goal, you know, I would, you know, cross every T, dot every I, run every test. But what I've done is I've discovered an anti-convulsive, anti-inflammatory compound of such power and such safety that I want every doctor in the world to know about it and to start to practice with it, because I believe it's so valuable. And within decades, Queen Victoria was using it. Within decades, it was half of all medicines in the USA and Europe.
Wow.
Wow.
And yet they've managed to get rid of it.
And yet we've managed to forget all about it. It's gone down the memory hole. How quickly we forget.
Yes, yes.
Mm.
So, doctors in New Zealand can prescribe it, can't they?
Doctors in New Zealand can prescribe CBD. They need a sympathetic specialist to prescribe THC. But here's a challenge. CBD, so, you know, as people, we work, you know, we can achieve great things together. Cannabinoids are the same. When you have a single cannabinoid, it's just not as effective. So when you make an isolated medicine that contains one cannabinoid, it's just not as effective as when you have what's called the entourage, you know, the entourage of those 450-odd chemicals I mentioned. So when you have full-spectrum plant material, you can get some really amazing results in really low concentrations and without people getting high. It's just helping get healthy because you're supporting your body's natural system of self-regulation and protection. But, of course, the medical thing is to simplify, to extract. So Sativex, the $1,000 CBD THC medicine, contains about $150 worth of black market cannabis products. Yeah? So
yes.
Really small amount of actual cannabinoids in it. And it's basically just CBD, THC, and a little sprinkling of terpenes. Yeah?
Right.
But it would be a much more effective medicine if it had all of the naturally occurring cannabinoids, you know, and all of the naturally occurring terpenes.
Okay, so why do they provide people with one that, and it's not the one I'm on, yeah, but why do people, are people being provided with that?
Well, it's about fitting it into the medical model. You know, the medical model is actually ill-equipped to deal with something as complex as cannabis. Most medicines contain a single API, a single active pharmaceutical ingredient. But, you know, as we know, cannabis has almost 6,500. So that's a lot of active pharmaceutical ingredients for you to push through the medical model. And that's why the preference is for isolates and for simpler things.
I see.
Yeah, that's okay. Why we need it regulated as a herbal supplement rather than a medicine. You know, we can still have it regulated as a medicine. That can be an entire category. No problem with that. But it also needs to be available as a herbal supplement. Ideally, it would be available as a vegetable.
How would I eat it as a vegetable?
Well,
this would be hemp as opposed to...
Either or. Okay. It doesn't matter. Uh-huh. So, well, you'd juice it probably, you know, if you were treating it yourself. Because the acids, I'm not sure if we've covered this already, the plant makes acids. The acids are up to 1,000 times more therapeutically potent than cannabis-based medicines. Cannabis-based medicines are basically processed. You know, and by being processed, they have transformed. CBD is not CBD acid. CBD acid from the plant has become CBD. CBD is still really, really useful, but CBD acid is much more useful.
Right.
So this is the thing. It's like the definition of a cartel is a group of businesses who have come together to protect themselves from ruinous competition.
Right.
Yeah. Hemp is kind of ruinous competition for quite a few industries.
Yes, yes. So that's very difficult. Isn't it? I mean, that means that we've got to have a lot of people making a noise.
It means we've got to have a lot of people saying the emperor has no clothes.
So we need a lot of people to write to their MPs and say, hey, look, you know, this is crazy. Mm. You've got people, 80 people died off synthetic cannabis. You've got, don't know how much mayhem and illness has come from pee, which has become so prevalent in this country. And we have a way of stopping this.
And the gangs are getting fat on controlling all the drugs, you know. Yeah. No.
Well, they might have done that anyway, but it would certainly be a lot better if they were not touting pee.
Well, Portugal has basically decriminalised all drugs, you know, or even legalised all drugs. And what's happened there is drug use has gone down, criminal revenues have gone down. You know, you're able to have proper health strategies. Spain has had legal cannabis for a long time. Uruguay, they have a state monopoly on cannabis. Canada, as you know, legalized it in 2017. We need to educate people. There's so much ignorance. People don't understand the opportunities. People don't understand the real dangers. Cannabis is much safer than rugby, and yet we prescribe rugby to children.
Yes. Well, now, I do feel, as a parent, that smoking marijuana, definitely seemed to demotivate my teenage children. Mm-hmm. I do feel that. So I have a little feeling there in my heart that I wouldn't want to see it everywhere totally available, because I'm not quite sure that this is a good idea for young people, because it is powerful. And the reason that it's so good medically is because it is powerful.
Should teenagers do drugs?
No.
No, I agree.
Yes.
So, but right now, so I'm a school teacher. Is the current strategy stopping children from using drugs?
No.
No. In fact, it encourages them. I'm yet to see a health teacher who teaches cannabis to kids in a way that educates, informs, and enables them to make correct decisions. Quite the contrary. My experience is what they tell students encourages them to go out and experiment.
Very probably, yes. Yeah.
So here's the thing. The fastest growing demographic of cannabis users in the world is over 60.
Really?
Yes. Why is that?
Because we have more pain.
Yeah. Because you get the most benefit.
Yes.
Now, if Nana and Papa are doing cannabis, is that going to make it attractive and cool to teenagers?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's simple, isn't it? I mean, it is. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Culture eats laws for breakfast. Our laws are not working. We need to have an intelligent, informed, educated culture. In Nepal or Tibet or places where they have mature cannabis cultures, youth do not use cannabis, and they would be mocked for doing so. It's an old person's thing.
Well, yes, as long as they don't then replace it with pee or something else.
But they're not going to. It's not the way it works.
Well, our teenagers these days, I think they've looked at the older ones and the people who've come before, and they've said, I don't think all this drinking and drug use is really working for them.
No.
And a lot of young people now, I think, are really quite onto it and not going there. And then, of course, we've got these youth waking up about climate issues and... So I'm hoping that we're going to have an awake and aware youth, whereas we've had a little time of young people being rather sleepy.
We're a very backward country on the whole, I think. It's really encouraging to see the youth rising up. And I mean, we've become consumers. Over my lifetime, I've watched New Zealand go from being a proud nation of citizens to a nation of apathetic, complacent consumers who are used to just getting by.
She'll be right.
She'll be right. And it's not. It's not. It's getting worse and worse.
I would agree with you totally.
Yeah. So, but this is the thing. Hemp offers us a fundamental way to transform our economy. We've got the NZ First Provincial Growth Fund. We've got this goal of 1 billion trees.
Yes.
Okay, oh my goodness. You know, but Pinus radiata takes 25 years to grow. You know, hemp has four times the yield of pine. And it's an annual.
Is it any use as a carbon sink?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you grow hemp, you're absorbing carbon, yeah? If you then use the plant for stuff, the carbon's still locked up. If you put it into building, it's locked up, yeah?
Well, I'd agree with that, as long as it's done biodynamically or organic or not lots of chemicals involved in its growing, I would say that, yeah, it would be
useful.
Well,
it's just, you know, here's a crop that's four times as productive as pine.
Right.
On an annual basis, and it's an annual crop. So every year, you'd be harvesting hemp and using hemp for food, for fibre, for medicine.
Right.
It just seems smarter to me than covering all of New Zealand in pine.
So let's just have a look at some of the other things that you can use hemp for. I mean, clothes?
Hemp and cloth, you know, China, you know, the classic fabric of China, Asia. You know, linen, Irish linen was made from hemp.
Was it?
It was, yeah.
But not now?
Not now. It may come back. This is the thing. I started telling you before how, you know, 1,000 years hemp was a medicine in Britain, and then cannabis was a medicine from a big medicine from the 1860s. In the 1920s, it was made, it was prohibited for common use. People were no longer allowed to consume cannabis themselves, but it was maintained for prescription until the mid-1970s.
Really?
In Great Britain.
Wow.
Yeah, it took a while for the US prohibition to get through there. In the 1890s, Great Britain was importing 100 tons of cannabis resin a year as medicine. These days, Great Britain exports a couple of tons a year as medicine. A company called GW Pharmaceuticals, which is largely owned by a company, a $1.4 trillion company called the Capital Group, whose senior executive is Philip May, husband of Theresa May.
Right.
40 football fields of cannabis are grown for GW Pharmaceuticals by British Sugar. British Sugar's managing director is married to the UK drugs minister, Victoria Atkin.
Right.
Just blows my mind.
Well, you know what? Then we have to target the sugar industry and tell them, you know, come on, you're decreasing, your business is decreasing because everybody's realising that sugar's not good for you. Why don't you move into this new hemp?
Oh, no, the point I just wanted to make there was the hypocrisy.
I know, but I get the hypocrisy, yeah. But I'm just thinking this might be a way to...
Sugar's a highly addictive drug. You know, yes. It's never going to go out of commerce, I don't think. You know, I mean, look at opioids. Opioids are so popular with... you know, as a you know, I mean, they have legitimate benefits. They have very many legitimate benefits, but you know, they're also grossly abused. And you know, look at OxyContin and Purdue Pharma, you know, Johnson and Johnson. There's been systemic. Oh, Unisys, a CEO recently actually got sent to jail for his role in the opioid epidemic, because when you're pushing these addictive products, well, you've got really good customer return rates, you know. And then the sugar thing, well, people get used to the sugar rush. I mean, sugar is definitely my daughter's gateway drug, you know, 100%. She understands it's a drug. She understands it makes her trip out. That's why she likes it.
Well, I'm a chocolate addict, so I can't talk.
Chocolate contains cannabinoids.
Oh, does it?
It does.
Okay. Well, I do like chocolate. we won't go there. So this is very interesting. So we can have clothing from hemp. We can have concrete. We can
not concrete. Food, fiber, medicine. So as a food, hemp seed is 30% digestible protein, and it's adestin as well. It's the really good protein. It's incredibly high in calcium, incredibly high in magnesium. It has every single essential fatty acid in perfect ratio, 3, 6, and 9 in abundance, like leaving wild caught salmon for dead. As a basic food unit to reincorporate into our diet, astonishing, because it has everything we need for cell health. It's a really good food. The fiber, basically, the fiber is a chemical feedstock. You know, so graphene is a really important and strategic mineral resource that's essential for our electronics. Graphene can be made from hemp. It's 200 times cheaper and 1,000 times more efficient. Basically, hemp fiber, hemp chemical feedstock material, raw material, can be used for anything that oil is used for as a chemical feedstock.
Right.
And then as a medicine, of course, this is a unique plant because and the plant's older than we are as a species. These molecules were first in the plant. The plant is a rich source of basically the molecules that we make and need to maintain normal health and function.
Right.
So it's got everything you need, really, for the basis of a healthy and wealthy society. So it's particularly ironic that it is a prohibited plant.
Very much so, yes. But, I mean, there's a lot of businesses that don't want us to be healthy, aren't there?
I don't know. There are certainly a lot of businesses that are, you know, the Western diet is obesogenic and inflammatory.
Yes.
And that is not good for us.
Right. Absolutely not. Okay. So I know that I interviewed Philip Watt or Philip J. Watt, I forget which we called him in the interview, from Australia. And he spoke... I interviewed him on a number of things, but he is absolutely passionate about hemp.
Mm.
And I saw on Facebook yesterday that he's just opened a hemp shop in I think it would be New South Wales, northern New South Wales. And so obviously he's managing to get some things to sell, clothing being one, as well as hemp oils and that sort of thing. And... So, in New Zealand, what can we buy?
Good question. Great question. I've started selling hemp products myself, actually, the last 11 months, crikey. So I've taught over 600 doctors so far. I've been to five medical conferences. I've run over $50,000 worth of work. I've paid for... I've done that really cheaply because I'm a lean, mean machine. I've done that for about $30,000, and about half of that I've paid myself, and the rest I've raised from the internet and from raffles and stuff. But what I've discovered is when you're talking to people, the best way to get people on board is to get them to experience the product. It makes the most amazing soaps. It's great food, you know, and the hemp oils that I've been taking to the farmers markets have been changing people's lives. Legally, you're not allowed to make any therapeutic claims, but, you know, Ronald Nesbitt said yesterday that, you know, the hemp oil I've been giving him calms my body and brain really well, and he's managed to take himself off Tramadol. Steve Gladding says, Tig's dietary supplements have given me a whole new level of calm, and it's really changed my life. Incredible product. So just by getting these hemp oils to people and getting them to experience it, what I'm trying to do is get people to believe, really, to understand, and then to become active agents of change. Because as 89% of doctors, 89% of doctors have no idea of the physiological system that regulates our health and protects us from injury and illness. Our endocannabinoid system. 89% of doctors have never heard of it. They have no idea what G-protein coupled receptors are. They are completely unaware that they are highly responsive to nutrition. They are completely unaware of the value of nutrition because they don't learn nutrition in medical school. And of the 11% who have heard about the endocannabinoid system, that's pretty much all they know. They've heard it exists.
Heard about it.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, the reason that I brought you in today to interview is because I started taking CBD oil and I've seen the benefits, and so I'm enthusiastic about it.
Yes, that's what we need, more enthusiasts, and less people who are afraid, because people are afraid. They're afraid of cannabis, and this is the legacy of the racist drug war. You know, marijuana, it was, everyone knew what cannabis was in the USA. Everybody knew what cannabis was. That's why they had to call it marijuana. That's why they had to tie it to Mexicans, you know, because it was a racist drug war to anti-competitively and fraudulently clear an incredibly valuable range of products from to prohibit an incredibly valuable plant. And that's what they did.
Well, some years ago when I was seeing the results on my teenagers and I wasn't happy, I wrote to Nandor Tanchos and I challenged the Green Party policy on marijuana, and I got an extremely comprehensive reply, and from that point on I was for decriminalisation of the plant, and now I'm a total hemp fan. So thank you so much for coming into the studio. I mean, you're just so knowledgeable about it all. I shall have to listen to this all over again. And of course, people can if they go to Green Planet FM and look up, now let me spell this right,
TADHG. Oh, no one's going to find it. No one's going to find it.
Well, type in his surname, Stopford, and you will find it on Green Planet FM, and you can hear it all again because there's so much concentrated information in this interview.
And please check out our website, thehempfoundation.org.nz. Reach out if you have any questions. We're here to help. We have 1 year until the referendum. There's big money coming in, distorting it. Family First are now up to $732,000 a year. It looks like they're possibly being funded by Big Pharma, alcohol, and the abortion lobby. So we've got foreign money looking to influence our election in 2020. We need people to understand the issues, and we need people to understand the potential.
This is a little start. It's a help. So thanks again very much, Tig, for coming in today, and I really look forward to seeing progress in this area.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've just been listening to me, Lisa Eyre, interviewing Tig Stopford on Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Tuesdays, or any time online at greenplanetfm.com.
I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. And become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM, and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say, Kia kaha and haere rā.